people that go to another meeting. Welcome to everybody, but there's one agent item we have to deal with before people run away. Yeah. I hope you're aware that in terms of the bill that was appointed by Parliament, I am just now informally sharing this thing, but there were two, all of us, to nominate someone from the SOP to chair this mediation committee, and from the NA as well, we had to appoint someone to co-chair in this process. Immediately thereafter, so that we deal with a particular one item only. Without any waste of time, let me head over to the secretary to run this process, because I just want to call the house to order only. But from then I will see what you can do. Secretary, can you deal with this particular item, please, for us?
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Grace Sinizulu. I'm the committee secretary for the Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Affairs in the SOP. Today we have two items on the agenda. The first one is the election of chairperson. I'm going to chair the first item, which is the election of chairperson. In terms of the joint rules, we are required to nominate the co-chairperson for both houses. But I'm going to start with the NCOP, with the nomination of the chairperson of the NCOP. Are there any nominations for the chairperson in the NCOP? Honorable Ntuli.
Honorable Chris Ntuli, I do nominate Hoshi Mokoena to be the chair of this session. Thanks.
Are there any seconders?
I second this. Honorable Marva, I'll second.
Are there any additional nominations? So therefore, I declare Honorable Hoshi Mokoena to be the chairperson of the Mediation Committee.
Thanks very much. As you are aware, in terms of the rules, we have to add someone from the AM, from the NA as well. Can we get the nomination as to who is going to co-chair in this mediation committee? Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I nominate Ms. Carol Johnson.
Any seconder? Yes, sir.
I do second the name of Carol Johnson. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Co-chair, is there something we're going to say before we proceed? My co-chair.
Thank you, Gina. Just thank you for the election. We passed the mandating procedures some time ago, and I think I'll leave it over to you, co-chair, maybe just to take us through the issues.
Thank you very much, my co-chair. You'll recall, colleague, that we amended that bill and we sent it to provinces. Came back with a final mandate. In terms of the rule, we gave it to our colleagues in the NA, and they made those amendments and improved the bill. But in improving the bill, there is only one slight technicality. Where they are proposing, where is the table staff who must assist us in referring to the particular clause. But what made us to have this mediation committee is because in the amendment from the National Assembly, there is a clause where they are saying for each and every decision, we have to get a mandate. So that will cause a serious burden to the NCOP. It means now even an ordinary motion in the House, when you pass a motion because it's a question, if you put that question to the House, you have to get a mandate. So that's the only technical amendment that they want to meet again as a disintimidation committee, to agree that it's not necessary to have that all, but we only retain those specific sections, 74, 76, and those other questions that have been mentioned in the bill, that for those ones will need the mandate from provinces, but not for all the questions. So that is what caused us to be here on that particular item. But all amendments on the NA have been accepted by the NCOP, except that one only that has caused some slight minor problem. Can I get a feel from our members as to what you are feeling about it? Honourable Wes?
Chair, I just want to get my facts right on this story. Out of the 9 provinces, I think 1 province, my province, agreed, and then I believe there were objections from 8 of the other provinces. Was that with regard to these amendments and which we're discussing here today? Thank you.
Yeah, that was the that one, they rejected that one as well. I can't remember any other clause where they objected, but that was the only thing that they also said was going to happen now for these other normal, simple questions that we put to the House. Unless the members want to be drawn to that specific amendment from our colleagues, but I thought the members have gone through. Well, we've been given this package yesterday, you remember. There's what all the amended versions and what we are here for. Mr. Mamabolo, if you want to come in, please feel free to come in so that to advise us if you feel there's something we're missing. We're trying to not waste time because it's as simple as that, you know. It's as simple as that. Yes, my coach.
Thanks, Co-Chair. Maybe just to say from the side of the NA, I mean, it really is a bill that affects the National Council of Provinces and not the National Assembly. When we affected the amendments, we did so on advice from some of the procedural staff from the NCOP. But it really is the NCOP's decision. I think from our side in the NCOP, if the from the NA side, if the NCOP are of the view that they want that clause out, we would obviously not have any objection.
That makes our life even more easier. Yeah. Any comments from the table staff? Oh, the NA, they are so progressive, you know. That's very good. Yeah, there's no business unusual here. No, my co-chair, she's very good. Mm. Yeah, do you still want to engage on this piece? Do you agree? So we'll report to our respective houses accordingly. So with your permission, let me thank my co-chair and all members from both houses for this for engaging in this mediation committee. But before we finalize it, let me allow my co-chair to say a few.
Just before we close, Comrade Hoshi, there was just one qualification just from our side that we just get some indication from either the Chief State Law Advisors or the Parliamentary Law Advisors that they are happy with the deletion. That would be the only qualification from our side.
Good. That has been taken care of. Any other comments, colleagues? 3, 2, 1, gone. The mediation committee is adjourned. Thanks very much.
Okay.
And thanks for participation. My co-chair. That's you more from the ministry. They apologize on our behalf. The committee has accepted your apology. Because we accept that it's good for people to grow, you know, in the same position.
we learned that you were going, you were trying to go to some greener pastures. Yeah. Are there issues that from our discussion yesterday, the department, that you still want to clear before we continue with the other questions? Because yesterday we were still discussing generally, even though we had zoomed into definitions before we moved to other clauses. From the discussion we had yesterday, is there anything you want to clear, or we are fine, we can just continue? I know we have briefed that of what transpired yesterday, and if you still want to clear some other things, that those questions that were posed to you yesterday, I can give you time to do that now, if you still want to.
Chair, we won't be dealing with any issues. Mr. Dada can fill in the gaps as you go, Chair, where he needs to expand on some of the issues. But he has been fully briefed.
Mr. Dada, I want to come in now, or you wait until when another salvo is thrown. But if you want to address us on some issues that were raised yesterday, as you have been briefed, you can do that now. But if you feel now everything is fine, wait for another missile.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I would wait for the other round of questions if they come. I have indeed been fully briefed by the team that was here yesterday. So I would wait for the next round of questions if there are any. Thank you.
Good. Colleagues, we are dealing with the National Convention Arms Control Amendment Bill. Are there general questions? Because today I want us to be a bit systematic and see how fast can we move into, because if all goes well, who knows, something might happen today. I said if the department will also be smart to me, we might end up doing something unusual in this parliament of business unusual. Any general questions, colleagues? Can you move straight? Okay, let me see, Honorable Nehru.
Yes, I agree with you. We mustn't waste any time. I mean, the parties agree that this is a good bill, so it was just the one outstanding issue, and that was the NCACC's capacity that we lost a very big contract because of feet dragging. I don't know if that is true or false. I just like clarity on that. And what are we going to do about the capacity of the NCACC? Are there any plans to beef it up and so forth? Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Honorable Leru, thank you very much for that question. I think Honorable Lala is here today, you'll respond to it. Honorable Fanner there?
Chairperson, I asked the questions which I wanted to ask on the previous occasions, and I will. I'm quite happy with the bill. I think I indicated yesterday that the bill is, as I see it, drafted to accommodate the our membership of that particular union of the arms nations, and I've got no further questions. I'm happy with the bill as it is.
Okay, can you respond to that question before we continue? Dealing with clause 2.
Chairperson, I'll try to deal with the question. I think I understand the question to be saying the capacity of the NCCC is probably under question. Obviously, because of reported incidents where some companies might have been exposed to some losses as a consequence of that. But here I wish to indicate that I think the NCCC, as you can understand, that is a cabinet committee, and obviously it meets at predetermined times. But as part of the people who run the daily business of the NCCC, there is a secretariat. Which secretariat, therefore, I'm currently the head of. So a lot of work that is done on behalf of the NCCC is done at a secretariat level, meaning at an official level, we take decisions of determinations on contract to the NCECC for direction. But generally, there are admin matters that we deal with on a daily basis. Last week, whilst we were here, I had made an admission that yes, there is indeed a challenge around capacity at the level of the Secretariat. And such capacity is currently being addressed in terms of trying to increase the capacity of Secretariat to be such that it can deal with the volume of work that comes from on a daily basis. But most often than not, people would say, well, the capacity should be at the NCECC. I'm just saying, NCECC is 12 cabinet ministers. Whether they are 15 or 20, that effectively does not affect the determinations that they make. To us, a lot of work is being done at the Secretariat level, and obviously within the parameters set by the NCECC. And the department at present is revising the structure of the Secretariat to ensure that it is designed in a manner that gives effect to the intent of the legislature in terms of implementation. And we are therefore able to deal with the applications as they come from industry. But the other point that is therefore needs to be made very clearly is the whole point of saying there are certain procedures that are laid down. And such procedures are such that they've got to be followed. They are procedures and they are laid down by law. Obviously, when a contract has got to be approved, there are certain things that are supposed to be attended to upfront. And some of them are not necessarily those that need to be done by the NCECC. There's certain documentation that needs to be provided by the company in terms of annual certificates, in terms of commitments and undertakings by the buyer and all of that. And if those documents are outstanding, the NCECC finds itself in a position where it can't proceed until such time that all the required documentation are lodged. But we're saying, where those documents are lodged, well, they should be dealt with as quick as possible. And one of the reasons why we are bringing the amendments here is actually to facilitate the work of the NCECC. Some of the benefits to flow from the amended legislation is a dispensation which will ensure that there is much more speed and much more focus in the manner in which we deal with the applications as they come through. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, are you happy, Honorable Lero? Okay. Colleagues, I want us to be formal now, to do the bill formally. After having listened to you, colleagues, dealing with this bill generally, and after having listened to all the comments by your good selves, it tells me now that it looks as if it is now desirable for us to pass this kind of legislation in this parliament. By so saying, I want us now to get someone who will move for the adoption of the motion of desirability, so that we formally consider the bill clause by clause. Whatever question that will come when we deal with the bill clause by clause, not so that we move. The bill is now formal before this committee. Whatever we say now will be such. Can I check if are we speaking the same language? Honorable Mac.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to propose and move the desirability option of this bill from the ANC side. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mac, move for the adoption of the motion of desirability. Any seconder? Mamianda?
Thank you, Chairperson. I move the motion of desirability. I second the Honorable as an ANC. Thank you.
Mamianda seconds Honorable Mac. There is something that's causing. Oh, yeah, maybe one mic was on somewhere.
colleagues, now the bill is before us. I want to put the clause 1. Are there questions to clause 1 in terms of the definitions? I won't go to clause 1A, B, C up until U. But I want to put clause 1 and find out if there are questions on this definition. Can AMSI try to respond to the question of a permit and a certificate? He spoke for about 10 minutes trying to convince me, but I was not convinced. But I can live with it. The question was of the two countries or three parties, which one is being certificated and which one has been given permit? Because as far as we are concerned, I thought maybe the country that is re-exporting, yeah, it was in terms of the re-exporting, to say which country is being certificated if we are re-exporting. Because the one that gets certificate is the one that receives, to say we give assurance that the item we're receiving, or the machines or whatever we're receiving, will be used for that particular purpose and nothing else, and will follow all the conventions stated by UN and Security Council. The question was still sending to say if it comes to us and we're sending back, in that instance, who must be certificated and who must get the permit? Try to respond to that. I hope today I'll get a short and concise and straight answer. I'm checking as to whether there are questions under clause 1. If there's none, I'll allow the department to respond to only this one question in terms of re-exporting permit versus the certificate, end user certificate. Want to try again, Colonel Amsi or Babu Ndadla or Babu Njike? Any of you can try again so that when I debate, I know what to say so that I don't send wrong signals.
Chekeneke, can I try I must say very upfront that I think my colleagues were equally competent to deal with the question yesterday. I'll just try to put it in different words, but the message is still the same. In this business, when somebody is buying an equipment from South Africa, let's talk about the Roy Falk. That person gives South Africa a certificate called the end user certificate, meaning the undertaking that they will not use the Roy Falk for anything else but for their own declared intentions. But at the time, that country therefore decides, it may be after 5 or 10 years, they decide to sell that Roy Falk to another country. In terms of their end-user certificate undertaking, they are required to come back to South Africa and say, we seek the consent of South Africa to forward sell this item to a next country. And South Africa will therefore look at that and say, yes, we agree, or we don't agree, depending on the country they intend to re-export to. And the reason for that is to ensure that South African equipment does not end up in countries that South Africa does not necessarily approve of, for whatever reason. But that is the matter around the certificate. But when you come, therefore, to a permit is applicable in instances where, for instance, if Dinel is exporting that Roy Falk to that buyer, they would have an EUC coming from the buyer, but themselves, as FDNL, they will therefore obtain a permit from the NCECC saying to them, on the basis of the application that you had lodged, we hereby therefore authorize you in a format of a permit to export this Roy Falk to that person. So let us say, a permit is an expression of authorization by the NCECC. And in this context, a certificate is an expression of an undertaking by the end user. Again, differently, when the NCECC considers applications from different countries, from different companies seeking to sell items, the authorization that they give is given in a form of a permit. IF delegations, they say to you, we authorize that Dinel can sell to country X, and I therefore print the permit, and I sign that, and I give it to the company. Therefore, they've got the authorization, and they have the permit to show for that authorization. But the precondition of us issuing that particular permit or authorization is, in the case of the Roy Falk, the certificate. So that's it. The certificate is an expression of undertaking, whilst the permit is a manifestation of open authorization by the NCECC. Thanks, Chair.
I understand. I understand the difficulty, but no, as you rightly said, you express yourself so nicely, giving the same answer but in different ways. That's why it's a bit, you know. But now, if there are, we still need some therapy to clear it up further. We'll come back to it. But yes, Honourable Mac wants to come into the fray. Honourable Mac.
Thank you, Chair. I just want a simple clarity. You need a permit from South Africa to sell to the first country, right, the first buyer. So why don't, and this permit has to come from the NCAC. Now, why does the second country that bought this refund from South Africa, why doesn't it have to apply for a permit? What is the difference? Because it then also applies for a permit from the NCCA. What happens then, it must be a country that falls under the same requirements as South Africa. Why do you then need a certificate and not a permit? Because it will cancel this thing of a desirable or a wrong country and a right country. Because then you can only sell to a country that is approved by the United Nations. Do you understand?
Yes.
You see? Because you can just issue permits. Why certificates? Because if this country fulfills the requirement that is put out by United Nations or the NCAC, then it doesn't need a permit. Because when it wants to sell, why a certificate? Why not a permit? But the first country needs a permit. What?
Yeah, before I respond, Rabulala, Honorable West.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I'd just also like to go a little bit further again with regard to the that secrecy clause. If a customer demands secrecy, again, how this is going to be presented at a so-called confidential briefing or whatever to Parliament. Thanks, Chair.
I must say we missed you so much, Dara, yesterday. Your absence was so conspicuous. You know, we missed you so much. But the Velem represented you so well. Even at some point, it would dump us as well and Derek. You know. But the dog represented you, you know, in all the meetings that ensued after that. Ngabate.
I think, Chair, I would reinstate the equation that I put in respect of a certificate and a permit. But I'd want to therefore answer the Honourable Member in the context of that. To say, if South Africa, again, sells to country X, it sells a Roy Falk, South Africa, through the NCECC, issues a permit for Denel to export to country X. And country X, if it wants to re-export the item to country Y, it comes back to South Africa and it seeks the consent to say, South Africa, do you, South Africa, have an objection? I think we have to put it differently. Does South Africa have an objection to us selling the Roifarc to a next end user? And South Africa would say, no, we do not have an objection. But the country that is selling, re-exporting, you must therefore understand that they've got their own laws, they've got their own systems of whatever. South Africa's jurisdiction ends at the borders of South Africa. You will therefore find that the country that you sold to has got its own format of an NCECC, which will therefore give a permit to that company to re-export. But the condition then would be to say to them, have you gotten the non-objection from South Africa? So I think that is the basis of it.
I'll come to the question that has been asked by Honorable Wes about the 66 clause. I think section 23 of the bill talks about disclosure and non-disclosure of information. And one of the key things that it says is that there would be a disclosure of information and business of the NCECC to Parliament. However, in certain instances, some of the contracts that companies enter into, there may be a clause for confidentiality. And the reason for this confidentiality, I must say, is that there is no doubt why people put secrecy clause to these things. The reason for that is some other countries who may find themselves in a very difficult region and all of that, they may not necessarily want to be known by their adversaries or their potential enemies that they've got this kind of equipment because of political as well as security reasons and all of that. And they will therefore insist that in that case, we would therefore want you to have some confidentiality around that. But I must say that the number of contracts that have got secrecy clause, I think they are very few. I have been in this business for about 5 years now, but I still have to see that contract that has got the confidentiality clause. I have never seen that. Better say, those are come in very few, they are in very few instances. But what we are saying in terms of disclosure then is, the report will come to Parliament, but the NCECC bears the responsibility to talk also about all the transfers, inclusive of those that have the shadow of confidentiality. But I think I understand the question to be saying, what would be the format of such information being presented to Parliament? I would not necessarily be able to say it will come in this way or that way, because our view is that when we come to regulations, we are going to get down to detail to say this will be the format, this will be the orientation of this report and all of it. But I think at this level, I think for us, it suffices for us to say there will be some information provided to Parliament. Obviously, with a view to say Parliament will therefore be aware of that. And the Parliament, as well as the NCECC, can therefore agree on how to deal with that information so that it's not seen as information that is kept away from the legislature by the executive. But it will be made known to, but obviously then, it must be dealt with under those constraints. But I think the form and shape of the information coming through, I think that is the detail we're going to thresh out when we come to regulations. I think as a matter of principle, we're saying we would disclose that information to Parliament.
Are you fine, Darrell? Darrell, are you fine? No, put it all right. Okay, you deserve the right to come back to it. I hope Honorable Maker, you are fine as well.
No.
Doc?
I think that the Access to Information Act covers a lot of these things. I think that you can access certain information if you apply that act, and there are, of course, certain information that is not going to be disclosed by anybody, by a business, by an enterprise, by NCECC, and so on. So I've got not a problem with that thing, Chairperson. And I also think that in all
fairness, that's why I look at the bill as I'm looking at it now, that in ordinary business ventures, Chairperson, there are also trade secrets that you keep from opponents or competitors, which is confidential, and then the confidentiality, as I see it, is that the need to know principle applied. So, Chairperson, I've got no problem with this secrecy thing, and I will go along with the bill as it is.
Honourable West. Chair, I beg to differ. Now, and this is the Parliament Research Unit, and they state, and I quote, "The workings of the NCACC, above all other bodies of state, should be open to the democratic requirements of access to information. It is being proposed that, in general, such access should be denied. Whilst the proposed provisions do admit the requirements of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, it is allowed only as an exception." Close quote. I'd like a comment to the department on that. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah. I think I must get someone to put between Honorable Van Herden and Honorable Boy so that when it becomes hot, so that yeah, so maybe I'll put Tara between them. Yes, but how would that?
I do not know what the document is that Honorable White is reading from, but I assume it's the research before the amendment that is in the bill. Those were the comments by the research unit of Parliament before the amendments that were effected. But I think in essence there were two things: confidentiality to members of the public, and the issue of confidentiality to Parliament. What is it, based on a secret clause, any secrecy clause in an agreement, can the NCACC refuse to make information available to the Parliament for the purposes of its annual reporting, as opposed to it being made available to members of the public? So there were basically two things. Now I agree with Honourable Dr. Van Heerden that, in terms of the access to information, in as much as the right to access to information is recognized, there are limits to that right, and those are set out in the Act that you can refuse under given circumstances. Now, the question was, can then the NCACC use the same clauses to withhold information to Parliament? Then the compromise that was reached at the level of the NA was that, in as much as we recognize your confidentiality clause, but the executive is accountable to Parliament. So if they have to report to Parliament on a confidential basis, they should do that. But they cannot rely on a secrecy clause in the contract to deny information to Parliament to which they are supposed to report for oversight and all those kind of things. So I think we need to deal with the two things separately. There is a right of access to information, and that is governed by the Act. And then there is an issue of secrecy to Parliament. So those are two different things. And I think the insertion of the clause of reporting to Parliament on a confidential basis was the appreciation that there may be trade secrets, there may be security reasons where the other countries may not want to be publicly known. But there must be a mechanism between the NCACC and Parliament how they deal with the confidential information based on the security clause. Thank you, Chair.
If I can just add one point. In addition to what my colleague has said, the issue here some other time is about the report. Because reports some other time, they come to Parliament and sometimes, they should go beyond Parliament and be accessible to the public. You'll therefore find that you may therefore go for the option where you'll come with information to Parliament in a format of a report that contains general information as well as confidential information. But what we will therefore call for in terms of this is therefore to, when you have a report, annual report that comes out, to be actually minus that confidential information going outside. But coming to Parliament, everything will be declared. But going beyond the borders of Parliament, you therefore want some information to be retained.
But both the legislature and the executive will be aware of that. But given the considerations of security and political ramifications and all of that, you may therefore decide to keep that away from the public. And obviously then, if the public calls for access to such information, you can therefore use the grounds, as stated by my colleague, that there are grounds of actually refusing access to information depending on the nature of that information. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, you still have a right, Honorable Wessa, to come back if you want to, but I think you've been ambushed now. You've been disarmed. If you want, you can come to it when we deal with Clause 3. You can come to it, Honorable Wessa. The time that I noticed there. Yeah, can you go to Clause 2? Now moving in terms of clauses. On page 4 of the bill, is the... Yeah, maybe to clarify this thing, Honorable Mac, the NCACC, National Conventional Arms Control Committee. I know it. Yeah. It's a committee consists of cabinet ministers, but the engineer thereof who... dealing with some of these transactions, it's Udlal. He's the man in charge of this thing. He's the person who is selling arms to wrong people. Okay, no. He's just looking into the activities of this thing. Yeah, we're now on Clause 2. Are there questions under Clause 2? Yeah, probably Adam. Is there anything you want to raise under Clause 2? I pass. And I'm now directing you to Clause 3 on page 5 of the bill. As you can see, the underlined versions are the new editions. As you are aware, the black ones that are in brackets, those have been removed. Of the underlined ones, that you think, are they improving the bill, or do you think we're overkilling? Now, let me draw your attention to the provision of 3B. No, let me just maybe to make it even more easy. Line 34. Reading from the function of the committee from line 33. The committee may under those rules. The committee may, inside or outside the Republic, conduct any investigation into inspection of and research in connection with any trade in and possession of controlled items. Well, back to yesterday's argument by Babunjigem. The investigation in outside countries. How feasible that is? Investigation inside our country, it is, I know, but outside countries, what might prompt investigations? And what if the particular country that does not cooperate with us? Give me a scenario. Is there any possibility that to happen? If that happens, are we having mechanism to enforce that particular country that we investigate into the country? Any other question, colleagues, before I allow them to come in? Honorable West?
Chair, I'd like to know from the department whether, with regard to whether they, one of the things brought up here was the website, whether the department's got a functional website and our famous Wassenaar or whatever this list is, whether this will eventually be published on the website so people know, even if this list is changed from time to time, what is conventional arms or what may be dealt with and what does not fall within that list again. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, the Wassenaar thing will come back again. The Wassenaar thing. As if you are there, Honorable the Ruhe said they asked the same question, but it looks even though in the same direction. Is right up, Honorable Mac, before I recognize Honorable Musaki.
No, I was just on a lighter note. The procedures, I just hope the procedures for investigation outside the country doesn't go back to quiet diplomacy.
Problem,
I think earlier on I thought you made a very important point to say, you know, yesterday we missed the Honorable West. We really missed him so much, I must ask you a sentiment. However, he was represented very well by Mr. Leroux and the doctors. We're raising general questions. Yesterday. I thought what we're doing now, we're dealing with loss by loss. And I keep on going back to the general question. I'm a bit worried. You're jumping back and forth, and that worries me, Chair. And I think we must begin to move into that direction. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I agree with you, and the music we had to move. But as I said, the members were allowed. If maybe there's something that you came to your mind after, even after we have passed, as long as it's assisting members, because when they debate in the chamber, they understand exactly what it's about. But I agree with you, we had to, to move a bit faster. But I'm not going to. To push members to hurry this thing. Yeah, I think those are the only questions therefore on this clause. Babu Dal.
Chairperson, let me just deal with the first question. I think it relates to the salvo that you put across. It's about inspection outside and inside of the country. How feasible it is for an inspection or investigation to be done outside of the country. Chair, the reason why we have a clause like that in this bill is for the very simple reason that arms generally are, well, the defense industry sells, this business is largely export buyers. Most of the time, things are coming in and out. That is the nature of the business. The consumption happens outside. And essentially, therefore, one of the things that actually makes you to be able to follow that are the very undertakings that the country, therefore, makes in terms of the certificate. For instance, if a country says, we buy this Royfalk, we are going to keep it and all of it. And in terms of that, you as South Africa, you have a right to through cooperation with the country and ask and say, we want to come and check whether you're still keeping to the terms of your undertaking. Does that Royfalk registration number so and so, is it still in country or not? We have an inspectorate that does that. It goes to quite a number. I was speaking yesterday to the lady that is involved in that. She'll be going to Pakistan to check on some items around what they call the some missiles which were sold there at some point to that region. But that happens in the context of the undertakings that were made, because we've got undertakings that say we will not sell these items, and we have therefore the right to go there and check if it's still there, it's still being used for what it was that declared to be the intended use. But yeah, I must say that practically, this thing would only be practicable if there is indeed cooperation between South Africa and the country that you're going to inspect, because no one reserves the right, has the right to be an international police to go everywhere. You can only go there if the country allows you to go.
And obviously cooperation becomes very important. That is why, therefore, to us, before arms could actually be sold to any person, the criteria that you follow, you should be able to be honest to that, so that you will know that the country that you're selling to is of this kind of a standing, and therefore will not renege on undertakings that it has made. So, Chair, just to answer you directly, this can only be effective and be applicable when there is cooperation between the two countries, and it can't go beyond that. That is why, therefore, you want to sell to countries which are friendly to you. As an example, you will therefore find internationally there has been cases where something different had happened in the Middle East and elsewhere. You might have supplied somebody with arms, and at some point those people can become your enemies, and that has happened. We will not get down to details of that. But to us, we're saying inspections is reliant on cooperation. On the issue that Honorable Webb had asked about the website, there is indeed a Department of Defense website that is there. And within that, there would therefore be a section that deals with conventional arms, the Directorate of Conventional Arms Control. That is where, therefore, all the legislation relevant to that, the regulations and the permits that you may use to export arms, the application forms and all of that, those are there. And what we will therefore do, moving forward, once the bill is passed, is to ensure that the control list that will therefore be promulgated after the bill has been passed will therefore be part of the website, so that there is no doubt and everyone has got absolute access to such information through the website. Obviously, the website still requires some improvement once the bill takes effect. It will be improved, and access, therefore, will be possible in terms of all the control lists that will be there. And obviously, as I said, there will be updates of these things made depending on the yearly basis or whatever time. But those updates will always be there, so, because I think we owe it to the industry to do so. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I think it's clear. But let's go to down there to... four. On line 48. The committee may determine that the specific quantity or type of any controlled item may only be imported or even disposed of an item. Whatever, don't want to read the whole thing. The question there is that now, if that country wants to dispose of an item, are they expected to go through the same requirements? I'm leaving the other exportation, trade-ins, and whatever, but I'm concentrating on the disposal of that particular item. I said in that particular clause, under line 48. Under clause 4, the sub-clause 4, the requirements on when we are disposing this thing, I still got to go through all the rigorous processes. Let's say we don't want this item anymore, we just have to dispose of it. I wonder if I make myself clear on the disposal of a particular item. Question put?
Chairperson, I think what we're trying to achieve there is actually a different intention. That section currently relates to, we're trying to preempt other legislation that may come dealing with arms. Currently, under the current regime, the FAPF have got an authority through the Firearms Control Act to regulate commercial firearms. But in terms of the current arrangement, if police have got to authorize an export of commercial firearms to a neighboring country or elsewhere, in terms of the regulations to the current act, they are required to come to the NCECC if certain thresholds are actually reached. Currently, when commercial firearms ex- exceed more than 10 per type, let's just say you are selling 9 millimeter pistols to country X, once they are 10, you are therefore required to approve that as the SAPS, get the permit from the SAPS, but also take that to the NCACC to actually to endorse that. And the reason for it is that when you have such quantities of arms being sold, chances are that they may be used for military purposes. Now they are 9mm weapons or pistols, they may be used for something else. So you therefore want the NCACC to be able to deal with large quantities of weapons leaving South Africa. In the case of ammunition, once you've got 20,000 per type of ammunition, if you've got 20,000 rounds, you've got to go through the NCACC. But if it's less than that, the police have got powers through their legislation to export that. So what we are doing here in Chairperson, we are therefore saying that there is a possibility in the future that there could be other legislation dealing with arms. And we are saying, we will therefore want those legislation to be subjugated to the provisions of this Act when certain quantities of those weapons are actually reached. That is all that we're trying to do, to actually say when large quantities are being sold, we would want the NCACC to have the ultimate power to endorse any other decision that could be made by other arms of government related to conventional arms. So I think that is the purpose of all this legislation. But as I said, it actually gives some expression to the current arrangement that there is in terms of the police. But you're saying there is a possibility out there that something else may arise, and we'd want to be able to deal with that.
Thank you very much on that one. Even though I reserve my right to come back to it at some point. Can you go to clause 4? Clause 4, I think, is clear that it is a norm, a normal practice where the president will nominate one member of the executive to chair that committee. But the question that comes to mind, no more about this, but in this clause we are changing the term conventional arms. Instead, we're using controlled items. But the BIP, we're still calling it, National Conventional Arms. But in the context from clause 1 to the last clause, we are removing conventional arms, but the BIP is still called conventional arms. Why that? Why that? Because if you can see in all the clauses here, where there is conventional arms, has been removed. We're putting controlled items. But the bill is still calling itself conventional arms. Why, what would you guess?
No.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think it's really for practical purposes. Because it's an issue that we debated. That's why I was looking at the state law advisor, hoping that he will come in. Because we're moving away from referring to them individually in the body of the Act. Although when you go to the regulation clause, which is 27, you will find that we list them separately. But throughout the Act, there are instances where we want to refer to all the three categories, which is conventional arms, dual use goods, and service. And in most instances, we deal with them as one, as controlled items. But in instances where you want to refer specifically to a conventional arms, to the exclusion of the other two, we will use conventional arms. So, but we felt that for the purposes of the name of the committee, and to maintain the focus on conventional arms as opposed to other equipment that is regulated by other acts, like the firearms, we need to retain the name as conventional arms just to indicate the orientation and the focus of the Act itself. And so as not to go again and having to change the committee itself, but to maintain that focus, that we are primarily focusing on conventional arms, unless those other arms regulated by other acts reach the threshold which Mr. Dada was referring to. But for that purpose of maintaining orientation and focus, we thought the name should remain as a conventional arms act. I don't know if my colleague would like to add.
Thank you, Chair. If I may just add on to what Mr. Njikela just briefed the committee about. It was a matter which we've raised with the department before we certified the bill with regard to the name and the change with regard to the term of conventional arms to controlled items. And the at the time that under discussions, as Mr. Njikela just indicated now, that the name of the committee is still being retained as such and for various other purposes in respect of international reporting requirements, and also the bill goes a little bit further in respect of now having controlled items and also other categories that can be listed under controlled items to cover that particular situation. So and in our view, that is why the name is still retained as national, the name of the bill, National Conventional Arms Amendment Bill. So the title still contained, and as Mr. Njikela said, conventional arms will still be dealt with as such, but the bill, and Mr. Dada will also maybe just elaborate on that, with regard to going much further as such, you know, and into the categories. And yesterday we had a discussion about certain components and parts which will also be regulated, will be listed as controlled items. Thank you, Chair.
I am Mosh. No, I'm Mosh. The term conventional arms is no more desirable in terms of the bill. You are removing it. But the name of the bill and the committee still retains the same name of conventional arms. So it's not desirable in terms of all the clauses here, but the bill maintains, calls itself a conventional arm. And the committee are calling itself as such. Now, the question is, the conventional arms, are they not part of the controlled items? Unless you are going to tell me that, no, there are separate issues in our, but if controlled items includes conventional arms, why are we removing conventional arms for this, using them controlled items? What about the other side? Only the name still maintains them. To me, I mean, I'm not that convinced. Try a bit harder. I'm not convinced.
I think, Chairperson, we understand the concern that you expressed, and I think we've had some lengthy debate around that very issue. But as my colleagues have said, I think the whole issue is around saying you've got institutions of government, and these institutions of government tend to have certain identities attached to them, and the NCECC is but one of those. And now we're changing the orientation of the act here to be such that it deals with conventional arms as a subcomponent, not a subcomponent, but as part of convention or control items. But we felt that the majority of the work that is being done by this act, now it deals with the dual use goods as well as services as part. But the main component, the main focus of this work is around conventional arms. And therefore, we felt that if you were to change that name, it may therefore affect the status of the committee. It may therefore affect the image that it has. And at the same time, we will therefore have to have, in other countries, we therefore find that the word conventional arms, many regimes would want to stick to the name conventional arms, because even if you report to the UN, they would call something called the United Nations Conventional Arms Register. It deals with conventional arms and all of it. So we would want to keep this word for purposes of that, to ensure that we remain in sync with what we'll call international nomenclature around this thing. And we all have a view that we would want to retain this position for purposes of image, for purposes of ensuring that we don't lose the audience that we have around us. Thank you, sir.
Let me give notice that I'll come back to it before we pass it. I'm giving notice that I'll come back to it. Can we move to clause 5? Any questions, clause 5? Under 5B, Roman. No. Sub 6. Why are you using the term the minister may with the concurrence of the committee? With the concurrence. I'm just, I don't have any idea, but I'm just checking. Why are you using with the concurrence? Because you are in these bills, the Office of the State Law Advisor, you're using in consultation or after consultation, whatever again. But with the concurrence, you're tying someone's hands here. Because it means if there's no agreement, lawyers will assist us which one has got more weight, in consultation and in, with the concurrence. Is there any reason why you're using concurrence? I don't have a strong view about it, but I just want to be clear.
Chair, I think this is the issue where we're trying to draw the line of distinction between what is administrative and what is executive in terms of the functions of the NPHC. Because the interesting situation is, because if you look, for instance, we could have used in consultation with the committee, which will basically mean the same thing. We could have used after consultation, which would have meant different thing, that you consult but you don't have to agree. But given the role that the minister plays, that is the Minister of Defense now, who happens to be a member of the NCHC, who exercises the administrative functions with regard to the Secretariat, for instance, which is where Mr. Dada is, because he's located within the Department of Defense. And for that purpose, but we don't want the minister to exercise this power in isolation of the committee itself. So there must be a meeting of minds between what he does and what the committee does as a member of that committee himself. So that's why we chose the word with the concurrence of the committee, because we think there should be a meeting of minds. Because the powers he exercises, they are purely administrative.
Okay. So that's it. No, I'm Jigela, no, we can't be serious. No, but as I said, I don't have a strong views for it. We can pass. And clause 6. Are there questions there? If there are no questions, then I'm still trying to think. When have I seen the AG's report talking about the activities of the NCACC? I wonder, unless if I push papers unnecessarily. Because it's possible, you know, we're getting so many papers, but I don't remember seeing an AG's report that talks about the NCACC. Unless if it's the question of where Honorable West question to say some of the information you might have access to, but it's not that it's given that whatever information you want, you'll get it. But the AG's report, is, as you are aware, is public. Yeah, you may comment on that one, Evan.
Chairperson, the AG reports on the NCHC are there, and they are available. But they are attached to the annual report of the Department of Defense. If you look at the Department of Defense annual report, and I think at the end of that you'll find that they will be the Auditor General's comments or audit report. And part of that audit report, therefore, there will be the NCECC. They are doing that because when they audit Defense Department, they therefore audit the NCECC at the same time. But I must say that the findings that the AG makes on the NCECC has got no bearing on the findings that the AG makes on Defense Department. I think it's purely for convenience purposes to put it there. But the intention is, if the NCECC has got qualified opinions or this and that and the other, that will have no bearing on Defense Department finding and vice versa. But as I said, currently, if you look at what it has been the case over the years, it's part of the Department of Defense audit report, and there will be a section dealing with the NCECC. There have been some findings there, good and bad, about the NCECC. Thank you.
I remember even qualified reports, NCECC, I remember. Let's hear a story, Mkabatele. Went into one municipality. That's why Mkhalipi will have to. He'll be having grey hairs very soon because of this municipality. In one municipality, which is the, you know, that municipality has got the address report. So this deputy mayor stood up. He said, "The committee members, I'm happy to see in this municipality the way we're working so good. We even got the address report. We are so happy you got the address." Hey, I'm telling you. Close seven. Hey, so I would demotor. Close seven, colleagues. It's a talk that deals with the control over controlled items. I don't have any question there. Let me check my colleagues if there are questions. If there are no questions, I'll pass to clause 8. This thing of a permit still baffles me, but what can I do? But I gave notice that I might come back to it. Any question about it later? We talked about this particular clause when we were dealing with the general question. Where we're dealing with all conditions as when you buy or receive or you sell, the purpose of that transaction must be an honest one. So before a payment is given whatever, you'll be expected to declare that the transaction is not going to harm either our neighbors, ourselves, or whatever. The purpose thereof. I don't see any hand. I'm going to close 9 now. I wanted to make a noise about close 9 because the same thing that I queried, controlled items versus the conventional arms, is still there. As I gave notice close 9, I'll come to it as well. Colleagues, let's go to close 10. Hey, I'm flow very well and I again. Yeah, looks over then to it. By the way, you said now let me ask this question. If it is a company that has got friendship with another company outside the shores of outside our shores, but the NCACC is not comfortable with that particular company the other side. And they also have a say if it is from company to company that that trade is between the two companies. The two companies have got a good relationship, it's fine, there's never any problem, but as government, can we stop that transaction?
Yes, Chairperson, I think just the answer to your question is affirmative. Because companies are subject to regulation by their governments. And therefore, if you can have two companies being in good friendship, but if the governments, which are the regulators of those companies, are not seeing in the same light, I think they can raise an objection to items being transferred from this country to that country. Because both companies will still have to apply for authorization before they can export. So if you apply for authorization, if government or the regulator in that country does not approve of the country you want to sell to, you could get an answer that is adverse to your interest. But I must say, Jefferson, practically, what is currently happening is that you therefore find that quite a number of companies are Dinet is being disbanded at present. You started to have certain equities, share equities, being sold to different companies. We recently have a company from Germany called Carl Zeiss buying into Dinel. Now they're called Carl Zeiss Optronics. You have the company from Germany, Rheinmetall, which has bought into Dinel. So those companies now, we start to have a company which has got positions in different geographic positions, meaning you'll have Rheinmetall in Germany and Rheinmetall in South Africa. But these are the same company, just like having Eskom in South Africa and in Swaziland, as a loose example. But what you're saying is, therefore, now these companies is the same company, but the fact that they are located in different jurisdictions, they will be subject to the laws of the jurisdictions where they are. They cannot, because they have partnership, therefore circumvent the laws and just move items in between.
I want to look at the scenario. Yeah, I'll come to another way. I'll look at the scenario way. As NCACC or as South Africa, we're not comfortable with company B that our items are going to, right? And the country where that company is our friend as well. We are, you know, they signed the signatory to the convention. But as South Africa, we're not head of that company. But that country B, the head of that particular country, the end user, what do you call this? Those who are receiving those items. Who had the final verdict here? Our friend, that country, they help with their company to receive those arms or those items. But in South Africa, we're not happy with, not with that country, but with that particular company that is receiving those arms. How do you find a middle ground in that scenario? Maybe before you respond, notice, let me recognize Honorable Wes.
Thanks, Chief. Two questions. Let's take a firm for argument's sake, BAE, Aerospace Industries. As a result, we buy the Gripens, and as a trade-off, they say, all right, we can manufacture certain parts of the plane for re-export. We've got no control of where those planes are going to be used. It might be a vital component in that aircraft. It might be just a tail fin. It might be anything. Yes, what is, surely they don't have to report every time they export 10 pieces of the equipment to us where it's going to be used or how it's going to be used. Question one. Question two, I have, know someone who's got a museum of military weapons, let's say 20, so that's more than your 10. This person decides he's not going to go to the hassle of applying for a license here for the things, or he finds difficulty in getting a license. So he wants to sell entire arms supply or his weapon collection of weapons to a purchaser, private purchaser. Then he's still got to get permission through the through your department. Thanks, Chief.
We really missed you, Honorable Wes. I really missed you. Babudas.
Chair, I was told yesterday that my colleague had to take a break. There was a reason why that actually happened. I think, Chair, just to deal with in the first instance, with your question that says, if the scenario that you painted, just to reconfirm that, South Africa's got a company, and country X got a company. We've got a problem not with the country, but with the company. And what do we do then under those circumstances? I think the question should therefore be, you ask the question, who prevails under those circumstances? I would therefore say if South Africa is not happy with the company, there should be reasons why that is the case. They should therefore be able to say, look, we are unhappy because of the following reasons. If the company cannot satisfy those particular conditions, we will therefore not be in a position to export. So to answer you directly, South Africa's position on that would actually prevail because the local company cannot sell to any other company if the authority which is regulating the arms transfer is not happy about that. But you never find that there would most often than not be discussions that are very political, government to government, to say, if we are concerned about this company, our concerns are like this. What guarantees can we get from government that they will be able to ensure that the company actually does what it says it will do? So I think there will be those discussions, but at the end of it, if those discussions do not bear fruit, I think South Africa may not sell to the company, even if they are happy with the country where the company is located, but obviously subject to discussions at a very political level. The second question asked by Honorable West, I understood them to be largely saying, in the case of a Gripen, when these items are moving, obviously there will be some different countries involved in that. How do you want to deal with that? There will be thousands of these things moving around. I think, Chairperson, one of the reasons why one of the amendments here was actually proposed is to deal exactly with that particular situation, because we accept that the reality of business at present is such that the current FDPs that we have, your Corvette, your Frigate, your your Gripen and the Hawk, when these items come to South Africa, past they move back for repair, back to South Africa, between Sweden and South Africa, Germany, and we are saying we want to move into a dispensation where the NCCC can actually approve what we'll call programs, saying we approve the program Gripen, which is conducted by Dinel, SAP, and this and this and that and the other. And we hereby therefore give them what we'll call a multiple export permit, which therefore says to them, they can therefore take an item to Sweden and take the other one from Sweden back using that authorization. But they will therefore have the responsibility to come at predetermined time to submit a reconciliation statement to say, in the period from June to August, we exported the following items through these ports of entries, through this, and therefore they would have the SAS documentation to show for that, because we are aware that there could be a possibility of misuse of that. They would therefore show, because SAS, normally, whatever you export, there is stamp that is there and there is all of it. So therefore you can see that this person conducted this kind of transfer over this period. But we want, as the regulator at present, not to allow the companies to move items, because if they have to come every time they've got to export a bottle or some small items, I think that you'd have 5 days to wait or 2 days, but that can have a bearing on the timelines that are associated with the project. So we'd want to have a multiple export permit, but without necessarily giving people a free-for-all, they would have a duty to reconcile. And during the reconciliation, we would want certain documentation to ensure that they do not export anything else but the Gripen. You can't therefore take a license for the Frigate and use that for the Gripen and the Gripen. And so we would want to keep them to that. And the other question, I think I've lost the other question. I just lost the other question, Chair. My apologies. I don't know whether my colleague would. No. Okay. The issue of museums. one of the proposals that we are making here, we have said we would want to put the issue of possession, because to us that is very key. The NPCC in the past had only been concerned about regulation of trade. But there are people who are saying, I'm not trading, I'm possessing firearms. We've had this museum. But we're saying, government has got to know who owns those museums and where those museums are. What is the stock that they have? So that we'll know exactly. That museum in Johannesburg has got a Rattel, has got a this and that and the other. And if they want to dispose of that, that authorization must be given by the NCCC. If it's being sold over to Mr. Njigela, who wants to be a collector now, we've got to be able to give an authority to him to possess, and therefore give the current military museum the authorization to transfer these items across. And obviously then, that is how we would want to manage it. Otherwise, you can have a situation where there's people who are in possession of live ammunition and all of that. And obviously, when in the military museum, some of these items may be effective. I mean, some of them can be robust as ever, but some of them can just be there for display purposes. But that has got to be declared in the authorization that will be given to the military museum. And they will be specifically authorized if they want to sell that to the next person. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much, Chair. We are just about to pass to close 12, but before we finally move, close 11. Yeah, close 12, yes. But then before we finally move out of it, on the same question about two companies. Now, what if company in country B, violates some of these agreements, deliberately? Is there any legal recourse there? How can pin down those companies that if they deliberately didn't follow all the conventional requirements? How do you do that? Because I suspect there might be some scenarios where that will happen. They will declare and assure everybody that no, they will comply with whatever. But at the end, when they violate some of this, what happened then?
Chairperson, is a very it's a very tight question. Obviously, in the case where South Africa sells as country A to country B, and country B violates the undertaking, the question therefore will be, who in country B is actually doing the violation? Is it government? Is it a company within that particular country? Because if it is a company, a company there, well, the authorities of that country will have the duty to actually deal with that particular company which violates undertakings. But where, therefore, the violator is actually the defense force of that country, it presents a different scenario. All that we have to do is actually to get into bilateral engagement with them at a political level and see how best they can comply with that. And if not so, one therefore can actually go the route of the UN, because the small or conventional arms are regulated though domestically, but also there are certain regimes within the UN which deal with that. You may therefore have to see what kind of a regime within the UN system of work you can actually exploit to try to get the country to account or to hold them to perform on their undertakings. But I think it's a matter that happens very rarely, but it becomes a very challenging matter if indeed arises.
Is there a way to deal with it in maybe in your regulation, not legislating here? Is there something that you can do in terms of... Because we don't want to over-legislate, but is there something that can be done in your regulations to say, maybe to look into it? Because I know there's a strong possibility that some companies might do that. Maybe think of it, maybe, and see how can we address it there. Clause 12, this is Mamflo's clause, this one, conventional arms to controlled items. Clause 13,
Same thing. Source 14. We are happy, colleagues, to see that, and at Source 14, the report is not sent to the National Assembly but to Parliament. So, the Department of Defense, they are very progressive. They understand what Parliament is. Yeah, unlike other departments. Source 15. We're now on Source 15. I wonder, because our spokesperson on defense, they were still out. We are moving a bit faster now. We're on Source 15. I don't want you to miss out on this one, because as our spokesperson on defense, you are too quiet for my liking today. Okay, I think Clause 15 is fine. Unless if there's something Babu Njikela and Babu Dladla want to bring to our attention on some of the clauses we're passing, if you want to bring something to our attention, feel free to come in and advise us accordingly. I am now on Clause 16, colleagues. Administrative fines. Any question? Our finance expert in this committee, Darrell West, deliberately wouldn't ask any question yesterday in terms of fines and monies and whatever. We're waiting for you. But if you didn't apply your mind on it, we'll pass. No, I think today it's us who are tired. No question on Clause 16? Doc? Are you fine? Good. No, man, I want us to finish this bill today, you know? If you allow me to do that, I'm going to have a big bribe for you, Cody. I'm now on Clause 17, exemptions. I want Honorable West to look into this thing of the finances and stuff under Clause 16 to check if there is anything. Because it deals with money paid to the National Revenue Fund. To see how is that fund used, you know, who controls it. And under exemptions. By the way, is the NCACC that exempts people or whatever? Looking at the very example you gave in our other meeting where you said that there might be, let's say, SAPs, they want to sell arms or send arms urgently. Can they also be exempted, you know, to follow all the normal routes? The other rigmarole will follow later. Under which conditions can people be exempted, if I may ask that general question?
I think the conditions under which this exemption can be applicable is where the SANDF and the SAPS are called upon to deploy on very emergency basis across the borders of South Africa. And this only relates to the NCACC and the weapons which are regulated by the NCACC. It does not talk about any other weapon that is out there. But obviously, in the case of the police, if the police will be deploying using weapons which exceed the threshold that we spoke about, they therefore have got to be specifically exempted by the NCACC because they do not have the power in terms of their act to export things which exceed the threshold that I spoke about, 20,000 rounds of ammunition and 10 per type in terms of caliber. But in the case of the SANDF, that is when they've got to deploy on emergency basis. But Jefferson, I must say that this does not generally deal with your normal run-of-the-mill operations, your Burundi, your DRC, your Sudan, because those things are not happening on emergency basis. The military is aware of that, it plans, it does all of that, so those would normally go through the authorization. But here we're talking about a situation where somebody has got to go across our borders overnight. There have been instances where certain high-level people in the country had to go to regions which are very unstable, and you therefore had to deploy your special task force as well as your special forces, and they do that immediately because of the nature of the visit and all of that. But we are saying that only relates to those circumstances. There could be instances, again, where there is suddenly a disaster in country, this and that and that, and you may have to deploy on very emergency basis. And this is only applicable to that, not to your normal deployment. If we are exporting equipment to DRC, it has to go through the normal process. If the police are doing some normal work, which they've been aware of for some time, they have got to go through the normal process. This is about emergency situations, which therefore call for emergency exemptions.
Can that also be linked to what happened some years back when South Africa invaded Lesotho? When one president was a president for only 3 hours and declared war against Lesotho. Can that be the kind of scenario, Babula?
Chairperson, I think the scenario that we had in mind, I think, was minus that. I think we had in mind the situation, the scenarios that I spoke about. And obviously, there will be other scenarios that they could arise. But one would hope that these are not necessarily the ones that you want to address.
Yeah, that was the day, you know? That was the day. After being sworn in a president, in the next 10 minutes, declare war. Hey. Right. Good. Close 18. Oh, no. Yeah, any comment to the two sub-clauses 25A and B? Nothing. Clause 18? These are normal processes, colleagues, that happen when these transactions happen. I think it's a calculated end. It's even temporary, it's over. I think we can pass. Yeah, but if no employee is saying I'm doing so well. Clause 19. No, I think we're fine, colleagues. Clause 19, I think we're fine. Let me leave clause 20. Then, colleagues, it looks as if we're doing so well. What I want to do now, we're now going to vote on the bill. You remember I gave notice that I'll go back some clauses, but for some reasons I've been persuaded to leave them. Because this bill, colleagues, let's agree. It's not controversial. And for that matter, all parties agree to this bill. And I learned even the NA, there were no controversies. All parties supported the bill. There were some comments here and there that they're trying to improve on the interaction by the NCACC, our country, companies versus other countries and stuff. All those other things, I mean, we all agree, I mean, we all agree. And if I had my way, after passing this bill, I mean, we might only request maybe even one member to make a statement on behalf of all of us, you know. But that will be decided by members when we'll be debating the bill. Is there anything you want to bring to our attention before we vote on the bill? Rabin Jigel, Babu Dada, Office of the State Law Advisor, Senator MC and the team and everybody. If you want to vote now, I want to make a day. And I just want me to keep you here, okay? I can keep you until Friday. Don't have a problem.
Chairperson, there's nothing particularly that I want to raise, but or maybe it's just a general comment to say, I think each time we go through these parliamentary committees, we come out a different team, because we get an opportunity to get people who are not part of the normal thinking that we have. We get people who come with an independent perspective and put questions to us, which we might have not have thought of at the time when we're drafting that. And I think that therefore makes us to be stronger than before we actually came through here. But we thank you so much for that.
Well, therefore, what do you want to agree? I want to put from clause 1 to clause 20, colleagues. What we're going to do about to the department, in our the report, I wanted to deal with the question of people who violate the agreement. What do we do if there can be strong measures that can be put to make sure that they comply? In some other meetings, we said that there are countries that are happy to jump in front of the queue to sign these conventions, but they will be the first ones to violate them again. Now, just to try in our report to strengthen that, to say, let's look into that, is how can we, and I don't want to use a strong term of pushing these countries, but it's how can we nicely talk to them so that they adhere to what they signed for. Colleagues, I have to put the whole bill before the committee, from clause 1 to clause 20. I'm avoiding to put clause by clause, clause 1, yes, clause 2, yes, clause 3. I want to put the whole bill before the committee, colleagues, from clause 1 to clause 20. Honorable Museki.
Chairperson, I move that we adopt the bill.
Honorable Museki moves that we adopt the bill. Any second there? We're not making an amendment, colleagues, we're aware. Yeah, without an amendment, because by this it shows that the department has done a very good job. Honorable Nyanda?
Thank you, Chairperson. I second the move.
Ma'am Nyanda seconds the move. Huh? Therefore, the bill has been agreed to by this committee without an amendment. Now, the report of the committee is ready. I want someone to move the adoption of the report. The report will contain exactly what I said now about to improve our relationship with other countries, with other companies that must adhere to some of these agreements. And if there are some difficulties, I will urge the department to come back to Parliament and report duly if they want to improve this. What makes us even more happy is to see that the department makes sure that the reports, the annual report and all the reports are tabled in Parliament so that members will have access to. Any mover to adopt the report? Any mover to adopt our report, the committee report? Mm-hmm. Colleagues, are still with me? Honorable Ntuli?
I move the adoption of the report as the chair has alluded. Thanks.
Moves for the adoption of the report. Honorable Mac?
I second the move for adoption.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Colleagues, well done. You've done so well. Let's thank the department for really making life easy for us. You can see that there were no many whatever disagreements. You know, we're speaking the same language, all of us. All the questions were just to clarify some of these issues. It's because you've been thorough in your briefing. Thanks very much. The department has sent a very good team. We are happy to have you here. Then you are therefore excused. Thanks very much. But this guy deserves some bonus. No, you are excused. Thanks very much. Okay. I hope today our lunch will come early, unlike yesterday. And colleagues, before we adjourn, you are aware that we're having this briefing in the NCOP chamber at 2 o'clock. But we're supposed to meet the legal aid board sure that they take us through that thick document, Mamplo. But because of that briefing, we are staggering the time of our meeting. I want us to agree whether we say 3 o'clock or 3:30, because those guys have flown all the way from Pretoria, they are here to brief the committee. We are giving them 2 o'clock, but because we can't meet that briefing, we have to be part of it. So what time can we meet to discuss that? Maybe for the department, if you'll still be here, lunch will be at the E540. Yeah, well, up here. If you'll still be around there, if you're not running, rushing for a plane, please join us there. But if you're rushing to wherever, please go well. Thank you very much. But I would have loved to see you there enjoying our lunch. Starting from 12:30, eh?
Yes.
Today, please, let lunch be at 12:30. If you don't come, then we cancel the lunch. We'll go and eat at Chisanyam. Thanks very much, Chair.
Okay.
So, what are we saying, colleagues, in terms of 3 o'clock? Honorable Leru?
Chairperson, if you remember correctly, the briefings we've had in the past when taking people to the parliament, to the people, there's been a terrible waste of time and everything. Can you not perhaps arrange that we do see sit at 2 o'clock? Because these people have flown all the way from Pretoria. And we can be briefed afterwards as to the arrangements for taking parliament to the people.
That's the proposal of Honourable Leru. Let me hear the views. Mami Yanda?
Chairperson, we had a programming meeting this morning, and the chairperson of the NCOP said all members must attend at 2 o'clock. So we agreed. They said we must only inform all our members to attend. Thank you.
So it means they were coming back here at 3 o'clock, eh? If there will be a change of venue, the secretary will inform you because maybe the speaker will be using this venue. But if there are no communications to us, at least we'll be coming back here. But if there will be some changes, we'll meet in other venues. So I suspect that they are waiting for us because the speaker wants to use this venue now at 12. With your permission, can we adjourn this meeting and come back at 3? Thanks very much.